Very happy to welcome Glenn Hansard back to the World Cafe. Longtime listeners may remember his appearances with his band, The Frames, and certainly with Marketa Erglova, his partner in the band, The Swell Season, as well as his co-star in the very popular film Once, that was a slow-building love story. Glenn took home a Best Song Oscar for the film. After some time off spent in New York City, Glenn recorded his first solo album called Rhythm and Repose. Once was turned into a Broadway production, and shortly before Glenn and I spoke, it won 8 Tony Awards. And I started out by asking Glenn about his original reaction to turning the film Once into a Broadway play.
I have to say, when I first heard about this, I was really scared. I rejected the experience, and I was like, I was asking John, please don't let this happen. I was kind of horrified, to be honest. And then of course, all these very interesting people started coming on board onto the project, and it was like, wow. You know, I remember hearing End the Waltz come on and thinking, geez, because, you know, everything that guy's written has been really kind of intense and dark. And I thought, that could be really good. And then they got John Tiffany, who'd never done anything with musical theater, and all of his stuff's kind of heavy and intense. And then I was like, you know, this, you know, and then I went and I had a meeting with them. I remember going to meet them on Bleecker Street in a little pub, and we had a couple of drinks. I remember End the Waltz going, I have no bleeding idea what we're going to do with this, but, you know, we're going to treat it with respect, you know. And that was, and they really did, they cast a lot of songwriters, so a lot of people who actually understand songs. And actually then when I went to see the rehearsal, which I was really, really, really nervous about, I just thought, you know what, well done, and if there's anything I can help you with, let me know. And then I ended up going and spending a little time with them in rehearsals, with, you know, talking about the songs and.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that they're musicians, because that was the key to the film, too, is that you were originally writing the songs and you weren't necessarily cast.
That's right.
And that made a big difference, too, having real musicians play them.
It did. And, you know, it's funny, without wanting to talk myself and Marquetta down in any way, John, I remember at the time, said to us, you know, I'm really glad we chose to shoot all the songs live, because that's when you were both at your strongest. And it was actually during the dialogue scenes that I was a little worried, you know, because, you know, you guys aren't actors. And so what John ended up doing he ended up editing out a lot of the dialogue. There was probably a lot more dialogue in I remember we filmed more. But John was like, you know what, I've noticed. And he didn't make it clear whether it was because we weren't pulling it off or whether it was because he just thought the film worked better, quieter. But he pulled out a lot of the dialogue, and a lot of the improv scenes that you see between myself and Marquetta they weren't scripted. So he ended up kind of making this almost like a mood piece, more than an actual, you know, dialogue driven movie.
And as you say, a fair amount of space,
yeah,
which is really, really nice. Glenn Hansard is our guest, and we're talking about the Broadway production, the Tony winning Broadway production of Once. But that is not our main topic for today. We're going to go to the stage of World Cafe Live and hear some of the tunes from Rhythm and Repose, the new album. But before we get there, I just have a question that I knew you before any of this. You know, Frames came by a couple of times, and even before the movie was out, you and Marquetta, Swell Season came by, So you were always kind of the underdog. You were always the guy who was the former busker. What is your reaction? I know it's a big question, but what is your reaction to success? It must change. I mean, you've got to dramatically change how you view yourself.
That's a great question, David. It's a great question. And I suppose what I'd say about that, I was really... I'm not sure if I'm kind of allowed to talk about it, but I was given some amazing advice. I got to meet Bruce pretty soon after we won the award, you know, a few months afterwards, and it was in Dublin. Bruce was playing Dublin. I was going anyway. I had my ticket, and then somehow miraculously I was asked, "Do you want to go meet Bruce backstage? Say a quick hello." And I was like, "Oh my God, of course I do." And I went in, and the E Street Band were all there, and they were all getting ready. And you know, and Bruce just sort of, you know, just was saying congratulations, and he was like, you know, Dylan's got one, you know, you've got one. He was kind of, you know, he was having fun with us. But later on that night, after the show, which was an incredible show, I got to sit with him for a couple of hours. He was asking me how I was dealing with the whole thing, how it was all going, and you know, and I remember sort of explaining to him that there was something interesting going on that I couldn't quite put my finger on, but all of the success came out of nowhere. It sort of happened really fast, and it sort of, and once really grew legs of its own and sort of ran off and became this thing that it was. And we were brought along for the ride, if you like. I was sort of trying to explain to him that there's this incredible feeling of like achievement and this incredible feeling of like, oh my God, look what's just happened. But then also in there, and I couldn't quite figure out why, there was a kind of a feeling of sorrow, and there was a feeling of not quite being able to sort of own it or something. And he put it so well. He just said, he says, well, think about the guy you've been for the last 20 years. You know, you've been in the frames. It's been you against the world. It's you and your mates, and it's all struggle, and it's all potential, but no proof, you know. And he said, the guy that you've been all for all those years has just died. And now you're someone else. Now you're trying on a new uniform. You've just gone from being like the janitor to the manager kind of thing. You know, so what's happening right now is, don't worry about it. This, you know, as much as success is a great thing, it's also a kind of a violent act. It upheaval, you know, it's an upheaval. So what's going on right now is you're mourning the death of your old self. And I wouldn't mind, you know, he said, there's a bit of blood in the milk. It's going to be fine. It'll go away. You know, and just let yourself live with it. And, you know, he sort of said, take a break and, you know, go and let your soul catch up with you, which was an amazing bit of advice to get from the boss. You know,
yeah.
He was just so gracious about the whole thing, and so gracious, and, you know, a man of real wisdom. And I really was able to walk away from that conversation owning it a lot more than I had up to that point.
And speaking of that time off, I understand that is part of the gestation of Rhythm and Repose. You decided to take some time off of touring. Swell Season had been out a lot, and take some time and move to New York. Had you always wanted to spend that kind of time there?
Well, yeah. I mean, anyone who plays a guitar and sings and has a Bob Dylan poster on their wall as a kid wants to move to New York and live, you know, in the village and go play with their friends. And we all do. And I got the opportunity to do it last year. And it was, you know, I've been to New York many, many times and slept on couches of friends. And, you know, there's a great Irish community, and I've always found a place to stay. But there's something about moving there. There's something about putting down your pay the rent on your flat for a year and just sort of going, right, I'm in, and moving all your stuff in and gathering your books and having a couple of guitars in the flat. There's something about that psychologically is just so freeing. And I spent a few months there, and I just, you know, had these great nights of just staying in and reading books and being in my own company. It's funny, you would imagine New York is the city you go and you get lost in, but actually you kind of go and get found there too, because it's the city kind of really just, what's the word? It sort of emphasizes or highlights or magnifies where you're at, you know? And so I remember going off and playing my guitar a lot, and I was living on Bleecker Street, and, you know, the people who rented me the flat had told me Steve McQueen had lived in my flat during the 60s. And I was just kind of immersed in this sense of history, in that, you know, Woody Guthrie had lived on the same block. And, you know, I bought a book years ago, The Beats in New York. And I remember they gave the address of Bob Dylan's first apartment, which was right off 6th Avenue there and 4th. You know, and just being like, oh, my God, it's all there. It's all the city. When you're still, you can feel the history rising up out of in the dead of the night, you feel the history rising up out of everything. And it's a wonderful place to be.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that address, because Le Poisson Rouge, right near there, and that apparently was where the beginning of this, the birth took place.
Yes, absolutely. I went to Le Poisson Rouge one evening in January. My friend Thomas Bartlett runs this lovely session there, the Burgundy Stain Sessions. And he has this band, and the band are just like, they're just guys who just know what they're doing. They're just guys who just are very confident players. There's no ego in their playing. They're just amazing players. Brad Albetta, Ray Rizzo, just incredible guys. And I went on stage and I had this bit of an idea, and the groove was kind of like the Don't Do It groove, Levon Helms, you know, or the band's Don't Do It, or actually Otis Redding's Don't Do It, but the band's cover. And I was like, it's a bit of a Don't Do It groove. It's in E, there's a C sharp minor, and I'll give you a shelf for the F sharp minor bit. And the boys are like, and it's, you know, there's 200 people there, and we're just sort of working the song out on stage without, you know, verbally, without playing it. And then, of course, 1, 2, 3, 4, we're in. And the song sounded so good. I remember just coming off stage afterwards and being really high, because it just had worked, you know. It's like what was 3/4 the way a song, by the end of playing it, it was a full song. Because, you know, when you're in front of an audience, that's the best way to finish something. You just get it. You find that verse. It's just in you there somewhere, and then suddenly you're performing it, and there it is. And so afterwards, I said to Thomas, do you think we could go into the studio maybe this week and just stick down some songs? And we went in and we stuck down 7 songs the first day. The second day, I think we put down 5 or 6. And then I lived with it for a couple of weeks. And I sort of slowly began to dawn on me that I think I'm in the middle of making my first solo record. I hadn't planned on it. It just sort of came about, and these musicians are so good. And there's a lot to be said, you know, for surrounding yourself with people who are, you know, kind of better than you, you know, as in they're better, you know, better players. And it was just, it was amazing.
Let's go to the stage and hear this performance of Love Don't Leave Me Waiting.
Show yourself to me. Show a little bit of respect for yourself and for me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take care of T-C-V-O.
Love Don't Leave Me Waiting, Glenn Hansard on stage at World Cafe Live. That's one of the tunes from Rhythm and Repose. And there's a couple songs on here, that and Maybe Not Tonight, that just have this real comforting kind of groove. And does that come from playing with these guys, with Thomas and this band?
It does, you know. And with a song like Maybe Not Tonight, what I was really trying to do, you know, we drive a lot. And, of course, we've driven across America, I don't know, maybe probably 40, 50 times at this stage, you know, throughout the career of the Frames in the Swell season. So when you've driven across, you begin to recognize the states just by the landscapes. And we would always listen to music. So you're in this bus or you're in a van or, you know, oftentimes, sometimes you're in a car and you're driving through these incredible landscapes. And the music oftentimes really suits, you know. And I wanted to write a driving song. I just was like, you know what, I would love to do that. And then I'd met Dave Mansfield in a cafe, and Dave had been telling me about the fact that he had toured with Dylan on the Rolling Thunder tour when he was 16, and Dylan had to contact his parents to ask him to bring him out. And here's David, you know, in the studio with me, and I was like, oh, I have this tune which might actually suit what we're doing right here. And so we down, 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 which again is very much taken in the band idiom. I have to say it was kind of, it's definitely been the easiest record I've ever made, because it was like, what have you got? Oh, I have this idea. You know, I remember having Brian in from The National, and he was playing these songs, and I thought, you know, what I love about Brian's playing, he's the drummer from The National, what I love about his playing is, like, he does this Joy Division thing so well. They're like, boom, 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 boom. And I thought, you know, I've got this thing. Boom, down, 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 boom, down. So again, I wrote the song, almost not for him, but to sort of, to his strengths. And that's really what this record was about. Like, Maybe Not Tonight was about David Mansfield's playing. I just really wanted to hear him do that thing. And so we wrote the song and recorded it the same evening.
Well, tell you what, let's play Maybe Not Tonight from the disc, because we got to hear all this stuff in context, right? This is Maybe Not Tonight.
Echoes of another time, playing lightly on my mind. There's many rivers still to cross, temper the bitterness in love. And though what you say is true,
Maybe Not Tonight, from our guest Glenn Hanser's first solo album, Rhythm and Repose. Tell me about the title. I assumed Repose had to do with your year off, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was. And also just the idea of, you know, something I've realized, I'm 42 now, and I've just kind of realized it, to be honest, is that rest is equally important to work. That it isn't a case of work, 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 and grab a bit of rest. It's literally a case of rest, work, rest. And when you rest, trying to do things like turn off your phone and get away from your computer and stop thinking, like, it's almost literally go to a different place altogether, so that mostly because your imagination gets to rise. Your imagination is almost like this, it's like the moisture in your mind, and when you take time off, it begins to rise up like dew in the morning. You know, I'm sort of explaining it over, like, maybe over romantically, but I really feel that one's imagination is where life's trajectory is born. I mean, I remember as a kid standing at the bus stop, and, you know, I didn't have a telephone. I didn't have any, because mobile phones didn't exist. And I would just be standing there at the bus stop, sort of gazing into the sky and gazing into the bushes or whatever, and just sort of thinking about my life and thinking about what I would like to do and what I would like to be. And I can pretty much firmly say everything I imagined as a kid, I'm now living. Now take that moment away, and, you know, you look at a kid nowadays waiting at a bus stop, and he's got his head in Facebook or he's texting his mates, which is all well and good, but where does the imagination get the opportunity to just unfold? And that's kind of something I was very conscious of on this record. I took time off. I went to Jamaica last year, took my first holiday of my life. That's why repose is a big word for me right now, because I'd never taken a holiday, and I went to Jamaica and spent 2 weeks without any cell phone coverage, without a computer, without internet, and I just, oh yeah.
Speaking of cell phones, that is poetic.
That is funny.
Let's go back to the stage, and what else are we going to hear?
Come Away to the Water, which is a song I wrote for the Hunger Games soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
to the water, to the arms that are waiting only for you. Come away, little lost, come away to the water, to the one appointed to see this through. We are coming for you. Come away, little light, come away to the laughter. Show yourself so we might live in you. Come away, little light, come away to the laughter. To the ones appointed to see it through. We are coming for you. We are coming for you. Yourself so we might live in you. Come away, little lamb, come away to the slaughter, to the ones appointed to see it through. We are coming for you. We are coming.
Come away to the water. That is Glenn Hansard on stage of World Cafe Live with one from the Hunger Games, which has a lot of good music in it. That being one of them. That how does one get involved with something like that?
Well, I was in LA and I was doing a gig, and I had met T-Bone Burnett again around the Oscars period, and he is somebody who's remained a friend, someone who comes to the shows whenever I go out there and comes to see the Swell Season and stuff. And so it's been a lovely friendship, very mellow, you know. And he invited me down to his house after one of the gigs, and I went down, we hung out, and he was working on this project, and he was really excited. He said, I've got this thing coming that I think could be really good. It's set 200 years in the future. It's all to do with like sacrificing your children, and it's kind of a dark story. And he gave me a copy of the Hunger Games book, and he said, and he played me The Story of Isaac by Judy Collins, the Leonard Cohen song recorded by Judy Collins, and it was so heavy, so beautiful and dark. And he said, do you think you could write me something which is kind of in this area? Think about, you know, just think about sort of West Virginian music 200 years into the future. What would that sound like? And we had this great conversation, and I read the book and didn't know anything about the Hunger Games as a phenomenon, just knew that this was a book T-Bone had asked me to sort of read. So I was like, absolutely, got straight to it and couldn't put it down and loved the book. And so I wrote a couple of songs. I actually wrote a few I wrote a few ideas and I ended up writing a couple of songs. And went to the studio, played them for T-Bone, and T-Bone took them. And this song, Come Away to the Water, ended up being recorded by Maroon 5.
Well, congratulations on Rhythm and Repose. This is going to be definitely my 10:30 at night, late night album for the rest of the summer. It's really a wonderful record. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
Glenn Hansard, our guest. And we'll be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.